Christian greetings to each and every one of you. It's a blessing again to be in God's house and to share around His Word. I was thinking this morning that as we sang the last song, Jesus, I Come, Jesus, I Come, I imagine that you with me were challenged by that song. And the words of that song, very meaningful words. Out of my bondage, sorrow, and night, Jesus, I come. Into the glorious kingdom of light, and so on. And we looked at a number of different comparisons, and we sang those. And we sang that we came out of those things. We're giving those things up. Just wanted to comment on that again, that interlude of our announcements. I was just afraid, took away the and distracted from the thought of that song. What does God have for you this morning? Jesus, I come. Jesus, I come. What is it that He's going to bring to you this morning? What has He brought to you? Brother Brendan announced already that Easter Sunday is next Sunday. I'd like one of the children to tell us what today is. Of course, it's Sunday. And I was thinking about asking what the holiday is today, and I guess it's an official holiday. I'm not sure. It's on the calendars, most calendars. One of the children tell us what today is. Anyone? Easter? It's Palm Sunday. So one of the children tell us, why do we call it Palm Sunday? Someone. I think that a lot of you children know the answer to this question. Someone raise your hand. Anyone? I see parents whispering to their children. You don't have to feel guilty because I did this instruction on the way to church this morning. So it's Palm Sunday because Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, and as He was riding on that colt, they cut palm branches and strewed them in the way before Him, and Jesus walked into Jerusalem on the triumphal entry. So open your Bibles to Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19, and let's read verses 28 through 40. And when He had thus spoken, He went before ascending up to Jerusalem. And it came to pass when He was come nigh to Bethphage and Bethany, at the mount called the Mount of Olives, He sent two of His disciples, saying, Go ye into the village over against you, in the which at your entering ye shall find a colt tied, whereon yet never man sat. Loose him, and bring him hither. And if any man ask you, why do you loose him? Thus shall ye say unto him, because the Lord hath need of him. And they that were sent went their way, and found even as He had said unto them. And as they were loosing the colt, the owners thereof said unto them, why loose ye the colt? And they said, the Lord hath need of him. And they brought him to Jesus, and cast their garments upon the colt, and they set Jesus thereon. And as He went, they spread their clothes in the way. And when He was come nigh, even now at the descent of the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice for all the mighty works that they had seen, saying, Blessed be the king that cometh in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. And some of the Pharisees from among the multitude said unto him, Master, rebuke thy disciples. And he answered and said unto them, I tell you that if these should hold their peace, the stones would immediately cry out. Now this passage doesn't say anything about the palm branches, does it? But some of the other gospels do, and we could read those, but we're not going to take the time to do that. It's interesting that I believe that all four gospels refer to the triumphal entry. All four of the gospel writers refer to it. It was meaningful. It was something that caught their attention. It is significant today as well. Now, just a few thoughts about this. We're going to spend some time looking at this account and some details, but think a little bit about the setting. Jesus is coming very close to the end of his earthly ministry. And Jesus was here feeling the burden of leaving. He was feeling the burden of leaving the earth and letting behind this great ministry to his disciples. Did the disciples grasp enough to carry on after he left? Would they turn away in discouragement and go back to their life of living for themselves? Would they turn away? There was so much to accomplish in the coming week. The book of Matthew devotes the remainder of chapter 21 through chapter 25 to Jesus' last message to his disciples. It was words of importance. It was words of teaching. Teaching about future events. Teaching about what to expect when he was gone. Jesus had a lot to accomplish. And then there was a physical and emotional burden, an extreme weight of the betrayal, the trial, and the cross. And all that was on Jesus' shoulders, as it were. All that was there as Jesus was heading toward Jerusalem, as he led the way there. It was on his heart, but he needed to press on. His commitment to the Father and his love for humanity and the men and the women and the children and all those that he had learned to love and to appreciate. It helped him to keep his commitment and follow through to the cross. It caused him to press on. In Luke chapter 18 and verse 31, then he took unto him the 12 and said unto them, Behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and all things that are written by the prophets concerning the Son of Man shall be accomplished. Here in chapter 19 and verse 28, we read this already. And when he had thus spoken, he went before them, ascending up to Jerusalem. He led the way. He was not about to give up. There were throngs of people there. People were coming for the Passover. I'm not sure that I have preached a sermon on this passage and this thought of Jesus' triumphal entry since 1998. I remembered I preached the message, and I went and pulled up those notes. And I had written in there that Josephus says, and I didn't look this up again, but Josephus says that coming to Jerusalem for the Passover could have been close to 2 million people, in addition to the people that already lived there. The streets by this time were pressed. There were throngs of people. And Jesus was headed for Jerusalem. He was headed for the place where he knew he would face shame and reproach and finally death. But he led the way. He was not about to give up. And so that's the picture that we have of Jesus as he's pressing on to Jerusalem, toward Jerusalem. And he comes here to verse 29, they were come nigh to Bethphage and Bethany at the mount, at the base of the mount called the Mount of Olives. And then apparently he stopped there and he said to maybe two of the disciples especially, he said, I want you to go into the city, into the town, and you're going to find a colt there as you enter the town. It's a young colt, a young ass, and I want you to loose it. He's going to be tied there and I want you to loose it and bring it back to us. Now, why did Jesus initiate this activity? Turn back to Zechariah chapter 9. In Zechariah 9, we have a prophecy of this. Zechariah 9 and verse 9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding upon an ass, and upon the colt, the foal of an ass. And so we could ask the question, well, did Jesus initiate this just simply because he needed to fulfill prophecy? Was it as they walked to Jerusalem, as they headed toward Jerusalem, did it just all of a sudden strike Jesus that, you know what, there's one more thing that has to happen. We need to do this for the sake of form, for the sake of the prophetic word. Why did Jesus initiate this? Is there any significance in the location? Bethphage, or Bethany, they were close to Bethany. I want you to think about something. This is a new thought to me. And I believe that I got this from Matthew Henry. But he says that the Passover was observed on the 14th day of the month. And this was the 10th day. Now, turn your Bibles to Exodus chapter 12 and verse 3. Exodus 12 and verse 3 says this. God was talking to Moses here. He was giving instruction for the law and for the sacrifices. Speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the 10th day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for an house. Now, Matthew Henry says that this day was the 10th day of the month. Now, you think about this. Jesus is heading to Jerusalem, and what was going to happen there? It was the sacrifice. Jesus was the sacrifice. And as Jesus walked along, and they came to Mount Olives, and maybe as he, we know that as, we can't help but believe that as Jesus walked along and all these things pressed on his mind, what was foremost is what was going to happen on Golgotha. What was going to happen on the cross. And maybe as he came along, he walked along and he saw the Mount of Olives, and he knew that sometime before the cross happened, he needed to spend time alone on that mount. And so as he walked along, he thought about the sacrifice. What was happening? What was happening here? Think about what we read in Exodus and how that on the 10th day, the father would go out and he would choose a lamb from the flock. It was a perfect lamb. He would pick the best lamb. Sunday school lesson talked about, used the word ultimate in the title, and we talked about that a little bit. It was the ultimate lamb. It was the one that was the best. It was the one that couldn't be improved on as he compared his lambs. And so as I understand it, they would bring that lamb. The father would choose that lamb. And maybe very quickly the children would befriend that lamb. They would care for that lamb. And the lamb was given the best treatment for those days prior to the sacrifice. The lamb was chosen. It was a precious lamb. And as Jesus came on this pathway to Jerusalem, Jesus knew what lay ahead. The lamb for this sacrifice needed to be chosen as well. Now we can say, you say, well, the lamb already was chosen. Jesus was that lamb. But think about this. Think about what was unfolding and what was happening. Just hold that thought in your minds. And so Jesus asked for this colt to be brought. Another question we could ask is, why a colt whereon never man sat? Now, any of you that know anything about horses and colts know that Okay, maybe you boys, you enjoy horses, you ride horse, and maybe you buy a horse that needs a lot of training, or you have a colt that needs training, and it's time to break this colt. Now, obviously, they had been working with this colt because it was tied. There were some preparations that had happened already, but if you have a colt or a horse in that condition, you certainly don't offer that your dad can ride it or that your mom can ride it. Someone who doesn't have much experience, someone who is easily thrown off. It's just, why did Jesus ask for this colt? Consider this scene. Consider the thoughts that were going through these men's minds. So you have the disciples, and they're walking to this colt, and they're probably wondering, what's going to happen? Here's some men standing here, but the master has told us to unloose him, to untie him. And so these men say, what are you doing? What do you think you're doing? And they say, we're following the master's orders. The master has use for him, and they conceded. They allowed it to happen. What was going through their minds, I'm not sure, but apparently each was willing. And then Jesus sat on that colt. We're sort of fast-forwarding through the story. Jesus sat on that colt. He was the colt yielded to him as he rode him. They threw their clothes in the way. The palm branches were thrown in the way. And Jesus was heralded as king. He was heralded as one to honor and one to worship. And I was reminded here in Luke chapter 19, did you notice that they worshiped him, they praised him for all the wonderful things that he had done. As those that were healed from their sickness and their disease, those that were made to walk again, those who were healed spiritually, they praised God for all the things that he had done. Jesus was heralded as king, not by the rich, but by the common folk. Those whom he loved to interact with. They tell us that, and I believe that we can relate to this, that in Jesus' day, if you wanted to herald a king, he didn't ride on an ass. He rode on a horse. And Jesus there identified with the poor. He identified with the lowly. But they heralded him as king, the one whom they would worship, the one whom they would give their lives to. And these people contributed what they had. They threw their garments in the way. They cut the palm branches. They gave what they had. It wasn't much. It wasn't anything costly. But they gave to Jesus all that they had. And so on this day, on this entry into Jerusalem, again the lamb was chosen. They chose the lamb, this paschal lamb for the coming sacrifice. And the people didn't realize what was happening. But Jesus here was giving himself as this lamb to be chosen, that had already been chosen for the great sacrifice of all time. Now, I like to think a little more directly about this colt for the remainder of the message. It was a young colt that was never ridden on. Now, I want you to think about that. Just picture that. It doesn't take a lot of imagination here, or knowledge or experience, to understand that a young colt, it's tied there. Obviously, it's been worked with a bit. But we all can see into it that this colt had a lot of potential. This colt had tremendous potential for extreme chaos. And because of what happened, we know that this colt had tremendous potential for being useful to the master. This colt chose to submit to the master. And he had that choice. I guess it was a choice he had. He had the choice to either revolt against it or to submit to the master. To either revolt and take his own way and his own will, or to allow the master to control where he went and control his actions. And so I'd like to ask us a question this morning. Are there similar details in our life? Things that in our life, things that that have the potential for extreme chaos or extreme usefulness when they're under the control of the master. I like to think about a number of things, and many of these, or most of these are, or maybe I should say all of these points are very simple points. But I have 10 points that I'd like to share this morning. Just briefly go over some of these, or could be whole messages in themselves. But things in our lives that we need to turn over to the master. And I believe that I did this again this morning. I never shared the title of the message. The title of the message is Loosen That Which Belongs to the Master. Loosen That Which Belongs to the Master. So what are those things in our lives that we need to loosen and give to the master? Number one is our will. This colt needed to have its will in harmony with the master, as it were, yielded to the master. And I know that we can look at this story and we can say, well, this was just a miracle of Jesus. The poor colt didn't have any choice. It just wasn't anything else it could have done. A little bit like the waves in the sea when Jesus calmed them. There was nothing that they could do but come in subjection with the creator of the waves. And here, Jesus was the creator of this colt as well. But thinking about the will of a colt, and thinking about what needed to be yielded to the master, we have a will as well. We each are created with a will. We have initiative. We have desire. We have passion. We as humans, we're able to think through things and discern. And we are created with desire for our own way. Think about a baby that's born. And God intended that babies would have a will, that they would look out for themselves. And that will, that desire, that personal interest is made known by their cries. And if it wasn't for that, mothers wouldn't know when it's time to feed them. We wouldn't know when they're hurting and when they're uncomfortable. But they express that. And then sometimes it doesn't take long, I should say, when even that will, even when they are satisfied, then they start expressing that will inside, that little touch of rebellion that's in their heart. And we're each created with this will, with this passion. We care about things that happen. We care about people. We care about how situations of life affect us, etc. And God expects that we would have purpose and that we would have meaning in life. He wants us to find fulfillment in life, and He wants us to take that initiative and that will and use it for His honor and glory. We're not robots. We're not zombies just floating along with the current, but we are able to reason, to discern, and to determine our course of life. Jesus, I come. Jesus, I come. Where is our will? Have we left that behind? Have we walked into the kingdom of light? How is it when we come up against some authority in our life? How is it when we endeavor to work things out with our parents to take their will, their direction, our own will? Our own will has the capacity, the potential to make extreme havoc in our lives. But when it's controlled by the master, when we turn that over to him, it can be a tremendous blessing. Secondly, is our time. Some people seem to get so much done in life. At least that's how it is from my perspective. I look at some individuals and it seems like they're able to accomplish so much. They get things done. And it seems sometimes like I get so very, very little done. There's always things to do. There's more to do. The fact is that every one of us has the same amount of time. were all allotted exactly the same amount of time, exactly. Why is it that some people get more accomplished than others? That's not our subject. I think my figures are correct, but think about this. In a minute, if we would just pause here for a minute, and you would try, and I would tell you to, in that 60 seconds, I want you to think about the potential of all the things that you can think about in a minute. Now, I know a minute is really short, but when you just stop and don't have anything to do except think about, through that whole minute, your mind can go a lot of places. Now, if you take, we have our 24-hour days, and let's just say that some people might even get 10 hours of sleep. And so let's just take 14 hours a day, 14 hours of productive time, 14 hours of productive hours when we're awake. In a year, there are 306,600 minutes. If you figure 365 days in a 14-hour active day, 306,600 minutes. Just think about the potential in 1 year's time of what you can do with your mind and your time and the decisions that you need to make in those minutes of what you're going to do with your time. It comes out to 18,396,000 seconds. Now, you know, we make split-second decisions, our time. We make those decisions as to what we're going to do with our time. And then sometimes we're busy, the time flies, or we idle the time away. We know that that idleness is a devil's workshop. And even though there's so much to do, and it seems like we get so little accomplished at times, we all have the same amount of time, and we have a lot of minutes to ponder, a lot of minutes to do things with. What are we doing with our time? Many minutes of musing and dreaming about what we'd like to do in life. Do your thoughts center around yourself? Maybe it's your dream of a vacation. Maybe it's what you're going to do this afternoon. Maybe it's, and the list goes on and on. Do they center mostly around ourselves, our time? Or have we given our time to the Master and allow Him to control it and to use it? Thirdly, is our children. Our children loosing things for the Master. We like to think that our children are ours. We love them. We care for them. They're precious to us. And many times we talk about our children. In fact, most times we refer to them as our children. I haven't hardly ever met someone and said, well, these are God's children that are following me. We identify them as our children. But we know that our children really aren't ours. They're God's. How do we feel about our children? How do we conduct our families and our homes? Let me ask you this question. Are our concepts and practices of beginning a family and family size and all of that, is it according to the Master? Is it in harmony with His will? Or is it in harmony with ours? We know that in this world, we have a clear picture of what happens. It's a place of chaos, isn't it? Home life and family life is a place of chaos outside of God and His blessing and His, when His laws are not abided by our children, loosing them for the Master. Fourthly, what about our outward expression and appearance? And all of our life and the expression we give to those around us. And as I thought about this, you know, our expression of life, which includes a lot of different things. It includes our speech, and we'll look at that a little later on. It includes what we do with our time. It includes how we conduct our lives and how we dress and how we appear to the world. Our outward expression and appearance. It really tells the story of who's riding the colt. It does. We can't get away from it. Are we portraying the Master? Is the Master riding the colt, as it were? What influences and dictates the choices that we make? the places we go, the clothes that we buy, our outward expression and appearance? Are we portraying to those around us a clear expression of who's on the colt, or do people looking on get mixed signals? Number five, and I want to be understood here, but I've titled this simply our health. And I know that our health, and you know this, many of you know this more keenly than I do, but our health isn't always what we want. And I thought about how vulnerable we are as humans. Our physical lives are in God's hands, and there's not much we can do about it. There really isn't. Maybe sometimes our health seems like a colt that's out of control. But remember this morning that our health is a blessing from God. And it's a gift from God, and we need to thank God for it. And as we allow God, as we turn that over to Him and loose that for Him, allow Him to number our days. We don't allow God to number our days. He already does. There's nothing we can do about it. But as we yield that to Him and accept that, I believe that it changes our outlook on even things like our health, our physical life. Number six, another thing that we need to loose and give to God and allow Him to control is our use of technology. I think that when it comes to technology, most of us here, whether we don't even have a cell phone, we're simply using the rotary dial phone on the wall. It's technology, okay? And wherever we are in that scope, the technology that we use, we all tend to feel like we need, don't we? We really do. I would have rather not walked to church this morning. I drove. It's technology. We feel like it's useful. It's something that we need. And many of us would also admit that there is technology that we have put aside, we've said no to, because either it's detrimental or we feel we don't need it. But in all of that, in whatever the technology is that we use, we would agree that even the rotary dial phone has potential for chaos. I'm old enough to remember hearing preachers talk about spending too much time on the phone. Picking up the phone and calling people. I'm also old enough to remember when my grandparents had a party line. And I remember being there to visit in the evenings, and the phone would give distinctive rings. And when it was a certain ring, oh, I forget the neighbor's names, but that's the neighbor's phone ringing down. Imagine. Just imagine today if you were talking on the phone and the neighbor lady could pick it up and listen to any time she'd want. It was a party line. They were grouped together. And so wherever we are in that spectrum of technology, there are dangers, there are pitfalls that we can fall into. And somehow we have gotten to the place today with more of the modern technology that we use that I'm afraid that we're getting to the place where we feel like we need this. And somehow we got to figure out how we can use it for the Master's glory and how we can keep it there. And I would simply like to ask this question this morning. Or we take this technology and we say that, well, if it's acceptable if the Master is in control of it. Maybe it's your smartphone and you say, well, you know, I need these things, and as long as I use it acceptably, why then Christ is in control. But I'd like to ask you this question. Is there any of the technology that we have today that we use that maybe the rider of the colt or the Master would say, get rid of it? Think about that. Do you actually need the internet? If you don't, why do you have it? We look at the dangers and we list them on one side. And I'm afraid sometimes the list is long and it reaches high. And then if you compare the list of needs, they're just very few. Think about that. What would the master actually say? What is the master actually saying about our use of technology? Number 7 is our music interests. Is the master in charge of your music? Is your music that which honors him and glorifies him? Or does it honor our own will and our own carnality? Does the music we listen to feed the turmoil and the chaos of our life without the master and living outside of him? Is our music that which the master can bless? And number 8, our reading material. Maybe it's the audiobooks that we listen to and all of what's out there in the realms of reading material. Is it that which the master can bless? Number 9, and I've simply called this our past life circumstances. And here again, it's a big subject, and it's a large subject, but each one of us knows this morning, at least if you have some years behind you, that the experiences of the past, whether it's your home life, whether it's your upbringing, whether it's bad experiences that you have had to deal with in the past, whether it's those who have mistreated you, those who have wronged you, those who have maybe even introduced you to evil and to wickedness, whatever all that may include, our past life's experience, the reputation that went with our family, and whatever all that may include, our past life's experience and circumstance. And this morning there are those who have allowed that to wreak havoc in their life, to bring turmoil and confusion. And it's like a colt that's running wild and there's no control over it. It goes where it wants. But we know this morning that God has placed each of us in the family. He's placed each of us in the setting. He's placed each of us in the circumstance that he has allowed. And that God is able to carry us through that. He's able to introduce us to people who are able to help us through those experiences. And even as we think about our past and dealing with all of that, the master can be in control of the colt. He can be if we allow him to. And last of all is our tongue. Each of us has a tongue. James says that it's like a deadly fire. It can be out of control. It can ruin a lot of people. It can ruin relationships. And it's like a fire that can destroy many, many acres. I remember one time hearing a man say that he was traveling out west, I believe it was in California, with his brother-in-law, and they were driving down the road, and they came to this enormous area, forest area, grasslands, and it was charred black. And he asked his brother-in-law, "So what happened here? What started this fire?" And he said, "Somebody threw a cigarette out the window as they were driving by. Just a spark. Just a spark." And the dry tinder began smoldering. And no one dealt with it then, until after a while it became an enormous fire that was out of control. This morning, I don't like to think of my tongue like that. And you're probably sitting here saying, "Oh, no, it's not that bad." But James says that it can be deadly. Or our tongue can be that which brings blessing to God and to his kingdom. It can minister grace to the hearers. May our tongues be under the control of the master in everything that we say. And we know this morning that that needs to begin with our thoughts. In closing, how is it in our lives? Is the master in control of our lives? This morning, let's herald Jesus as Lord. Let's herald him as Lord of our lives and King of our lives. and allow him to control us, to control our wills. Also this morning, let's give him what we have. Jesus came to minister grace, to provide salvation for all mankind, but he came especially for the lowly, those who are meek and humble. He came for those who were seeking help in their life and knew they needed a Savior. And so this morning, let's just simply give him what we have and consecrate our lives to him. May God bless you as you continue to serve him, as you yield your life to him. And let's continue to allow the Master to be in charge of our lives. Let's loosen those things in our lives, loosen them for his use, instead of hanging on to them and keeping them in our control. May God bless each one of you again. Let's kneel for prayer.